Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, season's kind of in peril at this point. We recorded before we all learned the news on Sunday morning that Matthew Stafford was not going to play against the Bears due to his back injury, his broken back, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit when we get going. Team lost to Chicago 20-13. So let's dig right into it. We'll talk about all that. Well, of course, we'll start with the injuries. And number one, the most important, he was out Wednesday. Today is Wednesday. Matt Stafford did not practice.
Yeah, you know, I hate that we have to start off the top of the show talking about Stafford, but it's probably the biggest news going on right now, and it makes sense to dive right in, right? So yeah, like you said, everything seemed positive at this point. At this point last week, when we recorded last Thursday, everyone was optimistic. We were, we barely paid much attention to the injury report with him because all the news was optimistic. He said he was optimistic, and then all of a sudden a chain of events happened on Friday, starting with a MRI that revealed a potential fracture, but apparently
one fracture or multiple fractures.
That's a good question. I don't think they've clarified that. and then, this apparently it's the type of injury that is not a you might be able to play through it and it'll just be really painful, but maybe you can't play through it depending on how the scans come back. And I guess they were kind of on the fence, and then Friday really like opened their eyes to some things. Saturday they started to prepare to play without him. By Saturday night, another set of tests basically told them that it wasn't going to happen. They wanted to leave the door open for a potential change Sunday morning, give him the opportunity to be dressed if he wanted to. But then Sunday morning comes and they rule him out for sure. So it seems like it took a really downward spiral, but you know, when you're able to step back and kind of see the whole picture of how the events unfolded, I mean, it makes sense. It doesn't change the fact that you are a team that is 3-5-1. You had a quarterback who was on his way to MVP type numbers, and now he's out. And he was in the top five, and from a statistical standpoint, the only thing he was lacking was wins.
Yes, team record.
Correct. No. And so here you are. Now, again, the reports are, if it's healed to a point where it's still fractured, but he can play through the pain, then they're going to let him get back on the field. That could come tomorrow. That could come in 3 weeks. It's still very unclear at this time. The Lions are doing their best to keep the information, you know, behind closed doors. And when Matt Patricia comes out to his press conference today, he says these five players are not practicing today. And then, sure enough, those five players are not at practice. And then Matt Stafford is at practice, but he's also not participating. And so I think it's wise of them not to put any undue pressure on him.
They have to go on some wild finish to make the playoffs. So
yeah, statistically they're not eliminated, but it basically is.
All intents and purposes, they are.
Right, and so there's really no need to push him. At Lions Wire, our own Scott Warhite, he wrote an article saying he thinks the Lions should just shut him down. You know, you got to remember, this is a guy who had back surgery last offseason, then re-injured his back, then had a hip issue, and then now has a second back injury unrelated to the previous back injury. And so maybe now is the time to just say, let's shut him down, reset the table, let him get fully healthy, and then look at next year. Because from a, like we just said, from a statistical standpoint, this team isn't really going anywhere. There's things that you can still ascertain from this season. They still want to win. You know, they still want to evaluate what they have, but you know, should they shut him down? That's an excellent question. I don't know which side of the fence I'm on. Do you have an opinion on which side of the, like, no, whether or not you think he should get shut down?
If he's got a broken back and they're worried about things getting worse, or they're worried about his, you know, it's all about his future. Like, right. If they were like, well, in 1 week you should be all right to play and you're not going to make it any worse, well, then he probably should play. But if not, no, let's shut him down.
Right, that's the trick. I mean, the tricky part is that they say, that's kind of what they're saying, is they're saying in a week, it's possible he is ready to play again. It'll be very painful, but he could be ready. But then, do you need him to play? And do you need
him to... Well, no, because they're going to probably lose the next two games and be 3-7-1, and anyways, they won't need him.
Right, from a seasonal standpoint. But then when you talk to him...
And then it's whatever he wants to
do. He talks about the fact that, you know, you only get so many games in the NFL, and you need to make the most of them, and you don't just want to throw them away. And so you understand, as a competitor, he wants to do it, but he wanted to dress with a broken back in case the team needed him to make some handoffs. Like, you almost have to shut him down for his own good if the back injury is at any point... If it's significant beyond a week, it might be time.
So this injury is not related to the back injury from last year.
Correct. It is right. A second. Because
remember, they talked about early on that, oh, it could just be from the thing from last year. So they know this is brand new.
Well, his back injury earlier in the year.
No, there we go.
Was related to this off-season surgery last year. This is now a second back injury that is unrelated to the first back injury. But again, points to the fact that this guy puts it on the line, and do you have to save him from himself? I don't know. I think he's, if I had a guess today, I would say he plays again this season, for better or for worse. But I understand the crowd that says, let's just put him on the shelf, hit the reset button, and let him get better for next year. 'Cause they'll do that with players. They did that with one player here that we're going to talk about in a little bit. So it's an interesting debate. I'm sorry.
Also, it works out great for Matt Patricia if he gets to shut him down for the rest of the year.
Oh, well, for sure.
Because he gets a free pass for whatever happens.
Yeah.
All right. What are the odds of this? I'm just going to throw this out there. And I think I know where you sit on this. And you make a lot of sense with what you said about, you know, his competitive nature. Now, there is a tradition of Lion legends retiring early. What are the odds of him playing out the season, or not playing out the season, going to the end of the year and be like, man, this is going to be it?
I don't think he would.
All right.
I think he's, you know, you got to remember, he's got $50 million still left on his contract.
I don't think he's a guy that's worried about making, look, he's more in the Andrew Luck boat, if I had to make a guess.
Sure. But take the money off the table. I still think that's in his it's in his nature to not be done yet. I don't think he's ready to be done. You can tell when you talk to him. You can tell when you look at the way that he answers.
You've already
questions.
Said all that. That's what
I
was saying.
I
thought I already knew the answer. Okay. So I was just asking it, just to ask it, just well, so it was made clear to everybody listening.
Yep.
All right, everybody else that was out Wednesday. Tracy Walker with his knee. Start with them.
Yeah, it's, you know, no improvement from
another reason
of weeks.
Not to play Stafford if all these other guys are going to be hurt and not playing. Deshaun Hand with his ankle.
Yeah, still no improvement from last week, which is not encouraging to have both of those guys down on the defensive side of the ball because they both are catalysts in allowing this defense to be multiple.
All right, Romeo Okwara with his groin.
It's an interesting one here because he's almost headed the wrong direction, right? Like, because he went from being fine to then getting injured and then being able to maybe play and then not being able to play and now being out entirely. So maybe he's headed in the wrong direction. Maybe they're just playing it safe. But again, it's another guy that you lose on that defensive line.
All right, now we're going to head into the concussion world. Rick Wagner.
Yeah, he's just got to go through the process. You've got to get through the first three stages of concussion protocol before you can even get onto the field. So no surprise that he's not on the field. He's still got to pass that phase three, which he may have today. Maybe he'll be on the field tomorrow to get through step four and then he would need a full practice to get through step five on Friday to be available for the game. But yeah, he's got brain injuries are tricky, so you never know.
Ty Johnson, same deal.
Yeah, exact same scenario.
All right, so guys that were limited Wednesday include Miles Killebrew, also concussion.
So Killebrew was concussed. Passed. Yeah, so he's passed his first three. This was like step four where he's on the field in a limited fashion. If he can get a full session in and then get doctor clearance in the next 2 days, he'll be available for the weekend.
Sam Martin, he played, although he didn't kick off on Sunday, abdomen injury.
And the fact that they don't have another punter on the roster speaks to the fact that he's probably going to be okay.
John Atkins with his wrist.
That's a new injury. We didn't know about that until today. He played more snaps last game than I think he has all season. So it didn't seem to hamper him at all. It'd be interesting watching him moving forward. But the fact that he's still getting a limited practices tells me he's probably okay moving forward as well. He'll just need a little bit of time.
All right, and there's five players that returned to full practice Wednesday, led by Danny Amendola with his hand injury.
Yeah, I think this is just maintenance. That's why he's listed here.
Mike Daniels, who did play Sunday with a foot injury.
And he re-injured his foot and then is still practicing in full. So that's very good news from a defensive line standpoint.
A'shaun Robinson, ankle and thumb.
Injured the thumb on Sunday, but played through it. Seems to be okay. Again, full practice, encouraging.
All right, Damon Harrison with the groin.
This is the same standard scenario with him. He'll probably get Thursday off and then return to a limited practice Friday, be questionable, then play on Sunday.
Finally, Austin Bryant with his pectoral muscle, his decision clock down to 7 days, whether they keep him on IR or promote him.
Yep. So we'll know basically by like next Wednesday what they're going to. It's either next Wednesday or Thursday. We're going to know one way or another what's going to happen with him. Excuse me. One thing I want to point out, though, is that you've got John Atkins, Mike Daniels, A'shaun Robinson, Damon Harrison, and Deshaun Hand are all injured. That's your entire interior defensive line.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you talk about the down defensive ends, you with Aquara down, Trey Flowers is your only defensive lineman that's not injured at this point.
So don't expect more blitzing on Sunday.
It's crazy.
They're going to rush one.
The nice thing is three of them are getting full practices in, but they're all very dinged up.
Austin Bryant's healthy. I think you have to promote him at this point. Might as well play him.
I mean, within a week, you're going to have to make that decision. I think you're probably going to have to put him in, even if you make him an inactive on game days, if he's still not ready mentally. But I think he's going to get promoted as opposed to not.
All right, so you talked about how the interior defensive line is in pretty rough shape. Kevin Strong was placed on IR, so now he's not available either.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Because this is an undrafted kid who there were low expectations for him going into camp. He earns himself a job. Then not only does he get on the roster, but he's getting into the rotation. He's averaging between 20 and 40% of the snaps on defense. He's a regular fixture in that defensive line. For him to end on IR is a very unceremonious departure from the 53-man roster. I feel very bad for him. I have reached out to talk to him. He says he's going to be good moving forward, which means that it's just a matter of resetting, getting healthy, and then going back and starting the off season. He should be ready to go come off season. But yeah, it's sad to see him go down. He was playing well, very well, in my opinion.
Is he staying with the team? I know he's got some home things with his dad.
He's under contract. Oh, you mean currently?
Yeah, so is he going to go home and be with his family?
That I have not asked him. That's a good question. Because, yeah, his dad has cancer. He's going through another round of chemo right now. Started a couple weeks ago. So, my guess is...
It'll be important to be around the team, but it's probably a little more important to be around his family more at this time.
It'll be interesting. Like, the Lions are the type of organization that would allow him that leeway if he needed to travel home.
All right. Trey Carson released from IR. So just like that. Goes from team's leading rusher, the game to gone.
He probably is thinking he can get an opportunity to go elsewhere because on IR with the Lions, he's getting a regular paycheck. And so there was probably some incentive for him to say, hey, I can go to another roster and make it somewhere. With as far as returning to the Lions, he cannot return until 3 weeks after the injury settlement. So if they had an injury settlement of, like, let's say 1 week, he is not allowed to sign with any team for that 1 week, and the Lions pay his salary for that 1 week. And then after that 1 week, he can sign wherever he wants, but he cannot return back to the Lions until 3 weeks after that injury settlement is established, because
it's happened like crazy. Yes. With just roster needs.
Correct. Yes. That's an NFL rule to prevent that from happening. So there's still a possibility he could return to the Lions. It's happened in the past with players. Josh Bynes, it happened with a few years back. But, yeah, he is, depending on what his settlement is, he could be signing with the team at any point. Or if it's a little, it could maybe, might take a little bit of time depending on what the settlement is.
All right, Lions claimed 6'9" offensive tackle Dan Skipper, former Lion, from off waivers from the Texans.
Yeah, he's insurance right now for Rick Wagner. They need a right tackle who has a little bit of experience, who can assist in practice right now. He'll probably be like a game day inactive, even if Wagner can't go, because they have Kenny Wiggins, who can also step out to right tackle in a pinch. So if Wagner can't go, you're going to have Tyrell Crosby start at right tackle. If Tyrell Crosby goes down, you still have Kenny Wiggins. And now you have some insurance in Dan Skipper. And, you know, it's fine. It doesn't move the needle one way or another, really, for me.
Team re-signs linebacker Anthony Pittman to the practice squad.
Yeah, so he's not even off the roster, off the practice squad roster for one game. He is cut early in the week, back on before the next game. Like I've said last podcast, they like him quite a bit, and they think he's worth developing.
And finally, they come and they go. The team has waived Michigan man Matt Weil
from
the practice squad.
With Sam Martin being able to punt, Weil didn't need.
Doesn't fit in their plans.
Yep.
All right, finally, there's a little bit of a scheduling update. The Lions at Denver. That's a week 16 tilt out in the Mile High City. It was left open, flexible, to be moved to Saturday if it was going to be a big game. Since it won't be, it'll stay on Sunday at 4 or 5.
Yep, exactly right.
All right, let's talk about this Bears game. Lions lose 20-13. I guess we're going to start with Jeff Driskel, who had a heroic attempt at a game-tying drive at the end of the game. Mixed reviews on his play. Seemingly, for what everybody expected, it was positive. Positive review.
Yeah, I think from an overall perspective, I thought it was positive. My expectations were kind of low.
Everybody's expectations were rather low.
Yeah.
This is the Florida quarterback we're talking about here.
Yeah, right. It's supposed to be the next Tim Tebow.
So exactly.
And you saw his athleticism. You saw his mobility and the ability to run. I mean, right out of the gate, the first play of the game was read option. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you are not going to have Stafford for a few games, I think you can curtail this offense to some of Driskel's skills, include some read options, use some quarterback draws. I think there's some things you can do to get him involved that can help him be more successful, help him get more comfortable. He's got the arm strength. You saw him uncork that one to Kenny Golladay, which was nice. That arm strength's always been there. Now the accuracy, we'll see how that comes.
Only 27 of 46.
And a lot of it was short. You know, he used J.D. McKissic as kind of his safety valve quite a bit, right? And McKissic got like 7 targets, you know, in the passing game. So that's, you know, like a little over 10% of what his passes were. And then, but the big flaw with Driskel is that he locks onto that first guy. He knows what the play is designed to do, and he knows where the ball is supposed to go, and he locks onto that guy.
That's why he's not a starting NFL quarterback.
Correct. And that can change with time and can change with experience and as he gets more comfortable out on the field. In those first plays, those scripted plays, you got to remember, with the timeline that Matthew Stafford had, Driscoll really didn't know that he was going to play until Sunday morning. So there wasn't a lot of time for him to ready himself. And there's good points to that and there's bad points to that. Good points is that he doesn't have to worry about it. You know what I mean?
He's got to be worrying. He's got to know what's kind of going on.
That's true. That's a good point.
He's aware that Stafford's hurt and that, hey, you might have to play.
Right.
And on time, it might be worse because now he doesn't. He's like, I haven't been getting ready, you know, because we thought Matt was going to play and now I'm going to play. Maybe I'm going to play, blah, blah, blah.
But
at the same time, there wouldn't be the real pressure of winning.
Right. I guess that's, there you go. But then on the positive side, he was able to execute the scripted plays very well. And now you can cater the offense to him a little bit more, and hopefully you can get him to settle in and he can get a little bit more comfortable. We'll get into the what he can do, because we're gonna talk about as the Cowboys game as if Driscoll is playing, because that's kind of what we're expecting
that's what,
right
that's
now.
That's what it's going to be. Might as well. We all know what Stafford's going to do anyway, so we might as well just talk about Driscoll.
Makes sense, right?
Even if he plays. Now, you do mention the scripted plays. Yes, he handled that very well, but this team, they stalled out in that opening drive, and they had to settle for 3 points.
Sure.
And Stafford is done a lot better. Obviously, I'm not making this comparison. Obviously, Stafford's the better player, but you know he still ran into some trouble.
Yeah, and on the road in Chicago, that's not unexpected, I guess. Right?
Also worth noting, Driscoll led the team in rushing yardage, 37 yards.
Right.
All right. Next. All right. So we talked about J.D. McKissic, who also added 10 carries for 36 yards, which is terrible.
Had to step up though with Ty Johnson out.
Yeah.
All got put on his shoulders.
And actually, although he only had 55 yards of total offense, like I don't know, he's not the worst guy you can have out there.
No, I worry where this team would be if they hadn't claimed him off waivers.
Yeah, sure. There'd be a big disaster on their hands. Taylor Decker makes Pro Football Focus's top offensive tackle of the week in consecutive weeks.
He's their top.
Time to start performing.
Well, he's long gone. Next year's gone. He's not coming back. Well, next year they
have
another
that's guy. Right. They exercised his fifth. I'm sorry.
Yes. So he made.
Oh, never mind. He could die from here.
he was Pro Football Focus's left tackle on their team of the week, their left tackle there for the second week in a row, which basically means of all the left tackles in the league, he's been the top guy the last 2 weeks, which is a very nice accolades for him. The offensive line as a whole is still struggling, especially in the run game, but in the passing game, he did well in both. Typically, what we're seeing from the offensive linemen is they're doing real well in either one area or the other.
Yeah, no, they never gel together into one solid unit.
He's showing well. He's showing well in both areas, which is a nice little bit of recognition for him.
Before we leave the offense, real quick, and also Jeff Driscoll gets a gold star for throwing to 10 different receivers.
Right, yeah. That was what Trubisky threw like to 6 or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
well,
but I'm saying. Like
it still looked great.
Yeah.
Trubisky. He was dropping dimes out there.
He had 3 drives where he looked good and the other 3 drives where he looked like garbage.
You only gave him what he needed.
Yeah.
All right, Trey Flowers stepping up with all those injuries. He had a sack.
Yeah, and he's getting pressures.
I think he led the team he didn't lead the team in tackles. He was second.
Flowers ended up being our player of the game. Just a lot of pressure.
Hard to choose somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tougher game. But Flowers, I think, has been amping up his game little by little over the last month of the season.
All right, Jared Davis played a little bit better, although he didn't get a ton of snaps.
His snap count was down to 77% when normally he's over 90. And not only was his snap counts down, but they took play calling duties away from him at times. He basically took 2 series off. Apparently it was pre-planned. But with less responsibility and maybe more rest, I don't know if the more rest has anything to do with it, But I think with less responsibility, he had his best game in like a couple of years.
So you think this was all planned? This is the goal, to limit his snaps to see how he responds.
I think the plan was Tavai is playing well, and we need to get Tavai involved, and we're going to start giving Tavai some play calling duties, which they did. And by giving Tavai some play calling responsibility, it happens to take off pressure off Davis. You take some pressure off Davis, you allow him to blitz more, you allow him to be more aggressive, you allow him to have to think less and react more. And he found success in doing that. And it'll be interesting to see if they do the same thing moving forward by trying to give Tavai more of the responsibility of maybe making play calls or making adjustments, and allow Jared Davis just to be more of like a heat-seeking missile, which is really the best part of his game.
All right, so we mentioned Tavai, and that's all we got out of the Bears game. It was sad. It was sad knowing that the Bears were going to win. Although we made it interesting at the very end.
Yeah.
But we all knew they weren't scoring.
It was I thought it was still possible
for them to pull that. Possible.
No, but I mean, even coming out how they did on that first drive, I thought, all right, well, just maybe they can pull it out. The Bears' defense, though, is just a little bit too good.
Yeah, monstrous.
Yeah.
All right. With all this, 3-5-1. We're, you know, everybody's sour on the playoff chances. I'm definitely sour on it. Finally sounds like you're sour on it, too. The Lions' playoff chances.
Yeah.
Only.
I mean, look, what do you...
Well, that's not really what I was... Go ahead.
No, I'm going to say, you got to win out.
No, I know.
And then even if you win out, you still might not get in, even if you win out, so...
All of this being said, they still only hold the 11th pick in the next draft.
And you know, like... When you look at the schedule, and if they're missing Stafford, I know there's people saying, "Oh, they're going to pick in the top five." No, they're not going to go. They're not going to be able to get up that high to begin with, first of all. But I still think
there's some bad teams in the league this year.
Yeah, and they play a couple of them, and so
those aren't guaranteed wins.
If they lose to Washington, it would startle me.
Remember when they went 0-16 and the next year they had to beat somebody. They beat Washington. And I'm sure all the Washington fans are saying, "Oh, we're not going to lose to the Lions. They can't beat anybody." I think it was Washington. All right. Let's move on to the Cowboys. A Redskins, one of their main rivals. Cowboys are 5-4. They had a rough one themselves on Sunday. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, they started out 3 wins, right? And then they faltered, and then they got back on track, and then they faltered.
The Cowboys.
It's a better team than 5-4, but they definitely have a harder road ahead of them. They could be on the outside looking in on this playoff picture.
Well,
in the NFC.
They either have to win the division or they're not making the playoffs.
Who's winning that division, though? You know
well,
I mean?
It's them or Philadelphia, so we'll see how that all pans out. They lost to the Vikings on Sunday Night Football. Probably a lot of people listening saw that, 28-24. Cousins played very well in that game. Anyhow, Vegas line. So mostly off the board due to the Stafford injury, but some of the places that are posting have Cowboys from 3-6. I bet that's all under the assumption Stafford's not playing. Mm-hmm. I believe the Bears game, it was 2.5 and it jumped to 6 once they found out Stafford wasn't playing.
Okay.
So think about if you would have bought at Bears 2.5, you had to feel real good. And it worked out for you. But think if you bought at Bears 6, you're sweating it out at the end of that game, you know, as Driscoll's leading him down the field.
Sure.
Unless you're a Lions fan, then you know it's going to happen. And you know you've lost your money. Well, no, some people got to hedge. You got to hedge your bets. You know, you can root for your team and bet against them at the same time. Michael Jordan probably never did that. Or Pete Rose. They always bet on their team to win.
Alex Karras.
Yeah. I think he was picking the Lions to lose here.
No.
I can't remember. I can't remember the story of Alex Karras' gambling.
Gambling issues. We'll have to look that up in the offseason.
It probably was. You're probably right. These are pro athletes. They pick the games that they know they're going to win and go after them. All right, the referees, Tony Corrente, averaging 15 penalties per game, which is slightly above the NFL average of 14.39. The shocking thing is they all sit around the average. Yeah. Nobody's at 18 and nobody's at 9.
There was one guy earlier in the year that was at 17.
But that's earlier in the year, small sample size. Yeah,
that's true. That's
but
true.
They're all going to regress towards the mean. Yeah, you know, Corenti's probably going to be on the very high end.
Yeah, it's all starting to level itself, find a level ground, right?
All right, so TV, Fox, 1 o'clock. Surprisingly, not Buck and Aikman, but it's, you know, it's a Cowboys game.
Sure.
Kevin Burkhardt and Charles Davis, so team number two. Is it no Spielman this week?
When we played our last game, why am I blanking on who was the last home game that they played?
The Vikings? You were there. Because they were at Oakland.
Same crew did that game. I bumped into Charles Davis in the elevator. He was looking sharp. Nice.
Yeah, well, it's on TV.
Suit. Yeah, he looked real sharp. We had a nice 30-second conversation.
Really?
In the elevator.
Mm-hmm. Bury the lead.
Yeah, it was fun. It was nice. I liked talking.
Said that at the podcast right after the Vikings game. All right. Talk about the Cowboys offense coordinated by ex-Lions backup quarterback Kellen Moore.
Yeah.
So he knew Matthew Stafford well. DVOA's Cowboys offense is number one, and we'll get into why that is. And most people know why that is. Lions defense, DVOA has them as 25, but we mostly are more famously know them as the 31st, giving up the 31st most yard or the second most yards in the NFL, 31st overall in total defense.
Yeah, the passing game defense has not rebounded the way we anticipated when Slay would come back. When Slay came back, it's still
still struggling mightily.
Yeah.
Starting at quarterback will be Dak Prescott. Go ahead.
He's playing well. He's playing best he's played in his career, probably. Kellen Moore has found a way to tap into an offense that suits Dak. You know, they've always... Kellen Moore, you know, when he was in Detroit, he was, you know, the word was he's a very smart player. And
didn't have the arm strength.
He was accurate,
he was
incredibly smart. And his value came off the field, behind the scenes. And that coaching was
QB
in his
room.
Yeah, it was always said about him. And so it's no surprise that his future, it almost seemed predetermined he was headed this direction. And now he's proving it, and that's good for him. And he's definitely helping Dak find success. They're a deep ball offense, similar to what we see here in Detroit. They're willing to take shots downfield. They have good receivers that can catch the ball on the outside, just like Detroit does. But they have a running game, which Detroit lacks, and that's what makes this offense so explosive.
All right, speaking of that running game, it's led by Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, he's playing well.
788 yards rushing this season.
Right, that's near the top. It's top should be top.
And he was a holdout. Don't forget.
And you know the Vikings had a game plan to take him out on Sunday night, and they did pretty well with that. Held him to 47 yards. But he, you know, he's a three-down back. He's one of these backs that never has to leave the field, and he rarely does. He's going to churn out yards. He's always been a problem for Detroit. And while Detroit's run defense has been improving, they're going to have to take some pretty massive steps to try and control Elliott in this one because he's very good.
Surprisingly, Ezekiel Elliott's 788 yards rushing places him at 8th on the table for rushing yards.
I think he might have been 5th going into that game, and then that 47 output dropped him. Yeah. Vikings had a good game plan to stop him.
Also, he's only played 9 games. There's only 3 ahead of him, Henry Carson and Cook, that have had 10 games to deal with.
My goodness, did Cook look good.
Yeah, well, he's excellent.
We'll get into that.
He's really helped out one of my fantasy teams. All right, the other so moving over to wide receiver. They made a big trade last year for Amari Cooper. He's worked out rather well for them. Also, Michael Gallup, Randall Cobb had over 100 yards receiving against the Vikings, if I'm not mistaken. We'll also see some Tavon Austin, former Ram.
So they use 3 receivers.
Like most teams.
Almost all the time.
Yeah.
More, I think, than most teams even. Like most teams use it 3 receivers about 60% of the time minimum, and then they can go up from there. they use their three receivers like 80% and up. So they use them more than average. Randall Cobb has kind of had a resurgence. Yeah, he struggled in the last couple of years as a Packer, but has kind of been revitalized in this offensive in Dallas. Gallup has found his own, and he's really starting to look like a guy who can turn into a potential star. Amari Cooper is already a star, and he's playing like one. Both Cooper and Gallup make a very formidable 1-2 punch. They can both play well on the deep ball. They're getting things. They're getting the balls that Dak throws well. They're getting the balls that Dak throws not so well. They're making him look better. It's a very nice. It's a very symbiotic relationship that they have going on here with their skill players, which is something that even as early as last year they were lacking. It's a nice combination of receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks that is making this offense hum. And it's going to be a hard task to shut them down. Now, it's not impossible. We watched the Vikings do it, and we watched the Jets do it.
Well, Dak still threw for 397 yards in the game. So shutting down the running game was big. And they just left Dallas to beat them with the pass.
Correct. But then, like at tight end, they got
old man Jason Witten. Kind of failed in the broadcast booth, so he decided to go back to the playing field.
He's not playing bad. He's not playing great, but he's not.
He's older.
He's not out there 100% of the time like he used to be. He gives way to Blake Jarwin a little bit. He's really their number two. And he's okay. But the tight ends in this offense, they just need to be okay because it's your skill players at the other positions are the ones who are really shining.
All right, moving on from all the skill. The reason why those skill position players are all great is because of these five guys up front. From left to right, Tyron Smith, Connor Williams, Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, and Lyle Collins. That's a really good group, maybe the best group in the NFL as far as offensive lines go, but they're hobbled right now.
Yeah, so Tyron Smith, former first rounder. Connor Williams is a rookie third rounder. Frederick, another former first-rounder. Zach Martin, a former first-rounder. Lyle Collins
should have been a first-rounder. But he had some issues before the draft.
Yeah, had to talk to police about an ex-girlfriend who was murdered. He had nothing to do with it, but it caused him to go undrafted because of the timing.
Nobody was sure he had nothing to do with it. No one was sure, right?
But you basically have four first-rounders, and Lyle Collins just got... He's now the highest paid right tackle in the league, right? He just got that contract that says, yeah, you were worth it. We know you're worth it. You're still worth it. And Williams is the
weak link.
As a third round pick, and he's playing well, for a rookie. The problem is that Williams is banged up, and he had to get his knee scoped. And that means he's probably going to miss. And his backup, Xavier Sulafalo, is not good. Like, not even a little bit good. And so all of a sudden, this is a big weak link. Now,
good thing for the Cowboys, the Lions' defensive line is extremely injured.
Right?
It's very hobbled in their own right.
But if there's a... This is the weak link on this offense right now, is maybe tight end and now left guard, which is not saying a lot. But when you have the number one DVOA offense... You're not going to have a lot of weak links. Now, Martin and Collins are also banged up. Neither one of them practiced today either. But the expectations are is that they're just getting kind of some like maintenance today and that they'll be ready to go. If they're not, they still have some other younger players behind them. Now, the guard situation would be a little bit harder to come by, but Cameron Fleming is another decent draft pick who would be able to step in at tackle. He's kind of their Tyrell Crosby swing tackle. But he's coming off an injury himself. So it could be interesting if Martin and Collins have some lingering injuries, but it sure looks like Williams isn't going to play. And I don't know if the Lions can capitalize on that or not, but that's an opportunity to penetrate the line is over that left guard position.
All right, flipping to the defensive side of the ball, and of course I'm excited to talk about that because it marks the return former head coach Rod Marinelli to the Ford Field sidelines. We'll get to see him stalking the sidelines once again. A cartoon character of a head coach, if there ever was one. No, they run a 4-3 base defense with single high safety with stacked box last week against the Vikings. The defense will look very familiar. His son-in-law ran it when he was in Detroit. So, you know, it's good. It's going to be good to see Rod again.
They stacked the box last week to try and slow down Dalvin Cook, and it did not work. Even though they dedicated extra people, Cook still managed 97 yards on the ground and 86 yards in the air. And the Vikings exposed a weakness on this defense that I think maybe wasn't there before. Now, their DVOA isn't that great. It's 20.
It's 20.
And the Lions' offense is 12.
Yeah, that sank a little bit from last week.
Yeah, and that's a Stafford-less.
Sure.
Means it's probably even a little bit lower.
Yeah, in the 20s somewhere.
But this Lions offense, even without Stafford, I think can still put up points on this Dallas defense. Can they put up points at a clip that the Dallas offense can? That's a different story.
Probably not. But
I think that the Lions offense can score. And the way they're going to do it is I think the way that the Vikings did it. Now, the Vikings threw the ball to their tight ends they had 9 completions to their tight ends and 8 completions to their running backs. Their tight ends caught 2 touchdowns and a 2-point conversion. And when you look at how Driscoll attacked Chicago last week, it was similar. I think he's going to have a harder time trying to find open receivers on the edges. And so instead, he's going to end up hitting the slot, which is Amendola and Hockenson, and then he's going to throw to McKissick out of the backfield. So I think we can see some of what we saw last week in the areas that Driscoll was successful. I think that can be replicated this week and helping him find success again against the Cowboys.
All right, so between Hockenson, Amendola, J.D. McKissick, and oh, for fun, let's just add in Logan Thomas, that group produced 15 catches for 50, about 115 yards. That wasn't exact. So, yeah, I guess that was more, that they had more success thrown through those guys in the slot. Although you did point out last week this was going to be a big weakness. This is the weakness they needed to exploit with Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, 115 yards isn't a huge exploitation of that part of the field.
They didn't hit Hockenson until the...
Yeah, it's late
through the third. Yeah, I was very surprised that they didn't start going after the tight end position more. When they did, I would say 100 of that 115 probably came from halfway through the third quarter through the fourth quarter, honestly, because they really didn't utilize those guys until late, and that's when they found success with them.
All right, so the Cowboy defensive line, we'll see DeMarcus Lawrence and Robert Quinn on the edges. We'll see you off the bench. Somebody we know well, Kerry Hyder.
It's a good system for Kerry. He struggled switching to Patricia's system. Yeah. And in the 4-3, he'll find more success. And I think he is finding more success in Dallas. Lawrence is really their crown jewel here. Quinn's good. He's having a bit of a down year, but he's good. Lawrence is really the thing that makes this defensive line chug, though. And they're gonna have to figure it out, because Lawrence will more than likely be over either Rick Wagner or Crosby, and you're gonna have a hard time trying to control him with just those two guys. Which means you're gonna need more tight ends to help and staying in block. And then if you're staying in the block, that means you're not putting them out in patterns, and then that takes away a little bit of your off the targeted success areas that you want. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle Lawrence, who is that will dictate a lot of how well this offense finds success.
All right, in the middle they have Malik Collins and Antoine Woods, but if he's healthy and plays, we'll see a bit of Michael Bennett, who's a new addition.
Yeah, and he can play inside, outside. He can do a lot of different things. Bennett is really a good player, has been a good player for a long time. Collins has played well. Woods, average. They even will throw Chris Covington in there at times. They'll rotate through those defensive interior guys quite a bit.
All right, moving back to the linebacking core. In the middle, they have Jalen Smith, and then the two outside guys we hear about constantly, Leighton Vander Esch and Sean Lee.
Right.
They loved it in these Cowboys telecasts that we get force-fed all the time. They love these two linebackers.
And when you look at these three linebackers, you would think that they're just loaded in the middle. Hmm. They've been struggling a bit. It's a bit surprising. Vander Esch has regressed a little bit. Sean Lee is still a very good coverage linebacker, but injuries have limited him and his potential. Smith is playing well. But overall, collectively as a group, they've struggled against the tight end. They've struggled against the backs. But the three of them will be on the field more often than not. Whereas most teams are trending towards like a nickel set at like 75% of the time, they're in three linebacker sets like 75% of the time. And so that will, it's very contrary to how the league is shifting now. But
sounds
it is,
like a very Rod Marinelli.
But it's a very Rod Marinelli defense, yes.
Yeah. All right. Going to the defensive backfield, the corners are Brian Jones, Chidobe Awuzie, and we'll see a lot of Michigan man Jordan Lewis in the nickel.
Yeah, Jones and Awuzie are really the primary outside guys. Awuzie was projected as like a nickel coming out of college. He's played well enough to be on the outside. Jordan Lewis was projected to be able to stay on the outside. He's now forced kind of inside. He's that smaller frame.
You've always said you'd love to have a draft pick by the Lions that was projected as, well, he's just a nickel corner, and be like, oh, he can play on the outside. He's really good. In fact, it turns out. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, like,
you'd like to have that too.
I think it. Awuzie was a guy who I think a lot of us liked when he was coming out, but I did think that he was probably an inside guy only. Lewis was the higher draft pick that year, but he's more been regulated on the inside. I think both of them have potential, but they're both a little bit undersized. And while Byron Jones is going to be able to handle one of the Lions receivers, I think whoever's on the other side will be in a real physical battle with the other one all game. And maybe it's Uze, maybe it's they use Lewis at times. But there's going to be a slight advantage to one of the Lions receivers, depending on who they get matched up here.
All right, finally, the safeties are Xavier Woods and Darian Thompson.
Darian Thompson was in the starting lineup last week. Jeff Heath was their starter, but he's been playing poorly and hurt. And so they used Thompson a lot last week. But like I said, they dropped those guys in the box quite a bit, and they used Woods a little bit deeper. And they just ran that kind of single high because they were trying to stop Dalvin Cook. Now, if I'm the Lions, I'm trying to spread these guys out because my run game is struggling. My starting running back is on IR. My next running back I cut from IR. My next running back is in concussion protocol. And now I'm using my scat back as my starter. Why not just spread them out? Why? I know you still have to make them accountable by running the ball. And you still need to keep the defense, within their, framework. But this is a defense that wants three linebackers on the field. And if they want three linebackers on the field, why not just spread them out? Your run game's struggling. You can throw the ball. Just spread them out. Yeah. Go to work. It's as simple as that. And you're not going to see it because that's not how the NFL works. But why not? I mean, I would chuck the ball around as much as I could in this game.
I like this deep. The best thing... This defense looks different than all the other defenses we've looked at this year. When you just look at it on paper, just off of snap counts, like these 11 guys, these are the 11 guys they're going to play. They're not doing all this crazy other stuff with all these other guys getting tons of snaps. They do a little bit on the defensive line, but that's a necessity of the game nowadays where you have to keep defensive linemen fresh. Yeah. Otherwise, they're riding with what they got, which is very interesting, intriguing.
They take Sean Lee off and put Jordan Lewis on.
Yeah, right? that's the move. That's it. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Very video game-esque.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but very definitely Rod not how it is anymore. That's Rod. Yeah. That's what we love, Rod. Nowadays, hated him when he was a coach. Now he's long gone. I buried the hatchet. You know, it's fine now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Special teams. Brett Maher, the kicker. Mm-hmm. They're not in love with him. It doesn't seem. Cowboys fans are.
They never are.
Yeah, Chris Jones is the punter. We'll see Jordan Lewis, I think, returning punts sometimes. They'll also use Tony Pollard. Tavon Austin will return kicks with Randall Cobb. Nothing exciting there.
No, Pollard, the rookie, fourth rounder, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Fourth round.
And he's Elliott's number one backup, and that's it. That's like their entire running back crew is Elliott.
That's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, it's very...
Not like how we're forced to do, everybody's playing. Right. The Lions, all 53 men. On top of it, we also have to sign all these guys, you know, and they're going to play a ton, too. You know, like this team's out. All offensive linemen play 100% of the time.
The injury bug has been very problematic for the team this year. And while I think they are better equipped to handle the injury bug, where they're at least somewhat still competitive, whereas in years past, to be hit by the injury bug as much as they are right now, they would have just folded. The games wouldn't even be close. They're at least competitive right now. Is that enough? No, it really isn't. But you still need to find a way to win. But it's nice to see that they're at least, you know, in these games instead of like last week. There was still a chance they could win the game. You know what I mean? And even though it seemed inevitable that it wasn't going to happen. The opportunity to do so was there, and that is something that is going to be present, I think, from here on out, the rest of the season.
All right, Lions DVOA for special teams, they're number two.
Yeah,
Cowboys 25. So this is the one unit where they have the advantage.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to give Agnew a chance to impact the run game, impact the return game, but. You know, this is an area where I think they can play. Yeah, but this is an area where I think Lions can play field position and see if that gives them a slight advantage. But, you know, they're going to need every advantage they can get.
Eric, this game has the feel of being a 28-10 Cowboys win. It's going to be 28-17, though.
All right. So because I'm getting buried by you the last few weeks.
You got to play the score. That's why I gave you the opening. I've given you a lot of points to work with.
My initial gut going into this was 28-20.
Yeah,
so I might as well just keep it at 28-20. Mm-hmm. I could do the Bob Barker and do the 28-18 and just play the under. But I'll keep it 28-20.
Keep it interesting.
In the spirit of the game. I think the Cowboys win this one. 28 points seems reasonable. That was what I had come up with as well. But I think the Lions can put up points. I still think they can make this a one-score game at the end.
This is interesting because I don't think there's a single soul that think the Lions can win this game. So that means they have a chance at winning this game. You know, it's one because everything's totally against them. Cowboys are a better team. If they would have had Matthew Stafford, everybody'd still be picking the Cowboys to win. You know, they have all these injury issues. Sure. You know, it'd be like, no, Lions don't stand a chance in this game. That sometimes they'll surprise you. Not enough to be competitive. But, you know, every now and again, they've got one of these.
Think of how the narrative changes if they win this game.
I don't know if it changes. It's just, it might a little bit. But at the same time, it's just a mirage. It's an oasis in the season of another season of misery.
But can I tell you, it would make my life so much easier. Because the negativity that rolls across my feeds now are it's difficult.
Well, people have reason to be upset. We're on nearly 20 years. I mean, there are three playoff appearances, but you know, once that wasn't happening every year, they kind of just happened.
I get it three times. No, I get it. I'm not saying it's not justified, because it is. It's okay to be upset. But there's some people that are really upset.
No.
And you know, I mean, you can't help Stafford getting his back broke. There's
nothing you can do about that.
I mean, these are the unfortunate circumstances that go with playing in the NFL. So,
all right. No new reviews?
No, nothing this week.
But we still thank all of you for listening. Hey, and if you've got a review in you, please review.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I want to echo what Joe just said. We appreciate everybody that's...
It's our own personal echo chamber.
Yeah. We appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, it's great. Please keep listening. Tell a friend if you know they like the Lions or
just
want to listen to this.
One thing I will say, though, is I pointed out on Twitter that it was 3 years ago this week that we sat in my kitchen and decided to do it. And we got a lot of nice responses from people on that. So thank everyone for saying nice things on social media about that, too.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all we got this week. And, hey, we'll all be watching on Sunday, and maybe the Lions could shock us all. And until next week, let's go Lions.